Ian McIntyre joins us now. The Canucks won't be winning the Stanley Cup this year. We don't even know if they're going to be playing any more games, although it sounds like Saturday, what is that, April 17th might be when they get back into action again. Obviously, that's a soft target. No guarantees at this point. The Canucks host the Leafs that day. Ian, what's the latest you're hearing about the Canucks and what they're going through right now and when or if they might be back in action?
Well, first of all, Jason, you're so negative. Just dismissing out of hand their chance of winning the Stanley Cup this year.
That's true, actually.
They could go on a run. Possible.
Yeah, they will be well-rested. I don't know if they'll be feeling great when they return to the ice, but...
Leicester won the EPL a couple of years ago.
That's true, yeah, yeah. But they had a good start.
Yeah. Footy reference for you, because maybe you don't like footy.
My dad grew up in Leicester.
Really?
He's not much of a sports fan, but I'm a big England supporter at the World Cup level. I can't say that I'm a hardcore soccer fan like Halford is. Like, I don't wake up in the mornings to watch it. I am a Newcastle supporter, so I'll be watching them.
Okay.
But mostly because I liked Alan Shearer. Like, I could break up with Newcastle, I would, because they are kind of like the grossest team, actually, I would say, in the EPL right now. Just their style, their ambition. They need a new owner. At any rate, enough about that.
Well, you should get some guys together and buy the team.
Well, do you remember? I think Saudi Arabia was going to buy them, and then that got nixed. Anyway, what's going on with the Canucks?
Well, that is petty of you, by the way. I'm not going to talk about the Canucks yet. I am going to talk about what I want to talk about, so just be patient.
Sure.
That's awfully petty of you to deny a Stanley Cup to another Canadian city. Because
I'm a petty man.
It's a bit of a national embarrassment that as much as we love the game, and more than that, as much as the teams in this country, and especially in the salary cap era, well, maybe except for Ottawa, have actually been trying to do everything they can to be as good as they can and try to win this thing. It's terrible that Canada hasn't won it since 93, and lately can't even get a team in the final. There was a few years there earlier in this century where, you know, at least we were close, and lately we haven't been close.
Don't say we.
Okay.
That's
I apologize.
Here's the thing, though.
Canadian teams have been close.
But the fact that no team has won since 1993, it's going to make the celebration even bigger in whatever Canadian city that is. And I want that city to be Vancouver, as long as we have enough police on the street.
Yeah. But yeah, you almost don't want it to be this season with the way things have gone. And you know, in Canada, well, not that there's even going to be a conference final here, because the final four will all be played in the U.S., but you know, without fans and the 56-game season and...
Without a parade, I think.
Yeah.
No, that would be really... Look, let's be honest.
No, you
I'm being
a parade,
bit facetious
just,
here.
Groups of 10 or fewer.
If they had a parade... If the Leafs won the Cup, the parade in Toronto would be a sight to see.
Yeah.
It really would. But I don't want to see that sight.
Yeah.
Well, I want to see the parade in Vancouver. And the Canucks have come the closest since 93. They've gone to Game 7 twice since then.
Yeah.
Which is amazing that... So I graduated high school in 1994. Mm-hmm. And I turn 45 tomorrow. Canadian team has won it in that span. It is amazing. It's one of the most really amazing things that's gone on that... really doesn't get talked about as if it's a big Canadian failure, but do you see it as like a Canada's failure, or is it just these individual clubs and maybe some bad luck along the way?
I think it's a collection of everything, but I do think, and I'm trying to remember the coach who mentioned this, and he kind of took heat, but he was spot. I think it was Ron Wilson when he was coaching in San Jose a long time ago. And I can't remember the circumstances, whether they were about to play a Canadian team in the playoffs or what the context was. But he said it's hard. I'm pretty sure it was Ron Wilson. Mm-hmm. He said it's just so much harder to win in Canada because there's so much focus and so much pressure, and the players feel that. I think there's something to that as well. I think compared to trying to win in Carolina, like, who cares?
Totally.
In Carolina or Anaheim, I'm not begrudging those teams their cups. They won them, and it is so hard to win. If anyone can, win 16 playoff games in the Stanley Cup tournament, they deserve to win the cup. But it's hard here because of the expectation, and whether it's the Leafs or anybody else, can you imagine what they're going to go through every day, especially once you get through the first round or remarkably, if you win two rounds, the way the pressure starts to build on you and you become the national focus. And every day there's questions about winning the cup in Canada and what it means. And, half of these guys are still from this country, no matter what team they're playing on. And they get questioned by their family members, and everyone wants to be in on it, this great thing. I 100% feel like it's harder for the Canadian teams to win because of the pressure.
You know, the one name I think of when you talk about that is Roberto Luongo. And I just think back to 2011 and the pressure that must have been on him, the pressure that he must have felt every minute of the day. And I remember lots went into his walks around the seawall that he would take before games to clear his head. But I also think about what those walks must have been like, because everywhere he went, he would have been reminded of how important this game is. Remember the town then? Everyone had a car flag. You'd walk around, there were signs everywhere. People were talking about it. Ian, you've been to American cities when the Stanley Cup is on, and I've been to American cities when the Stanley Cup is on. It's nothing like that.
No.
You show up to L.A. when the Kings were in the Stanley Cup final. If you go to the airport there, you don't know right away that there's a big hockey game on. It's just life is going on as normal. The same in New York. Tampa Bay actually was, there was quite a few signs there, but that's a smaller city. And Nashville was the same way, people were into it, but not in the same way in Canada. And I just think of how the player, how to deal with that pressure with like the whole city. And in some ways, though, if you're thinking of it like some people, the whole country, especially as a goalie, you're like, man, if I go out there and I don't play well, there are going to be, there's consequences to that.
Yeah, like I'm going to have to go into hiding. That's how you feel in Canada, like, because everybody knows you. Everybody knows who you are. Mm-hmm. You can't hide. You can't hide anywhere. And you make a great point about the atmosphere in the U.S. And there are some fervent historic markets, like, Boston. People care about the team, and Chicago and Pittsburgh, and there's a lot of places. But even in those places, like people in Pittsburgh, if you give them a choice between the Steelers winning the Super Bowl or the Penguins winning a cup, most people are going to choose the Steelers.
Yeah.
And most people are going to choose the Cubs or the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe people in Boston would choose the Bruins over the Patriots, just because New England won so darn many titles. But it is different. It is different there. Alain Vigneault said when he returned to Vancouver, I think it was his first trip back, and he was now coaching the New York Rangers, and he was asked what it's like coaching in New York versus coaching in little old Vancouver in the Village. And he said that coaching the Canucks is like, in Vancouver, is like coaching the New York Yankees, except there aren't the Mets and the Jets and the Devils and the Rangers. It's that big a deal without any kind of competition, like nothing's even close to it.
Has that changed in Vancouver for you since you started writing about the Canucks, since you started covering the Canucks? I feel like it's more fervent than it was.
Yeah.
Even compared to 1994, I think it's more fervent now than it ever was.
I think it was, and I think that's partly kind of this slow decline and of the CFL you know, the Lions used to draw twice as many people to a game as the Canucks.
Way more than twice as many. My first Lions game I went to, 59,000 sold out.
Ooh.
My first Canucks game that I ever went to, this is all in the 80s, maybe 9,000 people at the Coliseum.
Oh, so you were there the first season with the Lions?
I was my
NBC place, I mean?
No, it was 80, I think it was 85.
Oh, okay.
The Eskimos were in town, and they would sell those games out.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, it was insane. It was the place to be, and I know a lot of people can't believe that if you're younger, but it was way cooler, for example, to wear Lions stuff than it was to wear Canuck stuff if I was in elementary school.
And everybody knew who the players were.
Mervin Fernandez was like a massive star, bigger than any Canuck at the time.
Yeah, I think, and if you look at the market now and how much social media there is around the Canucks compared to any other team, I think that's kind of reflective in the following. But I also think it also reflects that the following now is more extremist. Like when things are good, everything is, it's so much awesomeness to it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe I just said that sentence. When things are bad, you know, it's a disaster. You know, the sky's always falling or it's spectacularly blue. And there doesn't seem to be anything in between. And that, you know, that's both a blessing and a curse. It, you know, who wouldn't want that kind of emotional attachment to their hockey team?
I think fans are way more...
It does become troubling at times for people to deal with at critical times. But I would agree with you. I'd say that the Canucks market share, if we want to call it that, continues to grow.
I think fans are so much more educated than they were. I think about 1994, and I guess maybe that's just where I was in life. I was in grade 12, and there wasn't the information at hand. Like, we know who's on the fourth line now in Vancouver, and we know how those fourth liners are doing statistically. There's analytics. There's this constant discussion on Twitter. We never had any of that.
Yeah.
It was more just, hey, let's cheer for the team. And you didn't care what the shots were at the end of the game. It was just, there were far fewer opinions out there than there are now because there was far less information to form those opinions.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there are so many more outlets or portals now for people to pour their fandom through, you know, to exercise their interest in the team. And not only do people know who's on the fourth line, they argue savagely about who should be on the fourth line. And maybe who's on the fourth line in Utica some nights. But I mean, it's the reality, and there are so many great aspects to it, and you certainly wouldn't want it the other way. Like, you would never want to go back to a time where the building was half empty and people didn't care and people didn't know who was on the fourth line.
Mm-hmm.
And if you told them, there'd be a shrug. You know, so this is, you know, it's a great thing that the Canadian teams have, that investment from their fans, that they care so much. Because it is like the Yankees in New York without any competition. It's such a huge stage for all these Canadian teams to be on in Canada, but it does come with some consequences too, and I think partly those consequences are partly reflected, not wholly, but partly reflected in that drought since 1993 that no team has been able to get it over the finish line.
It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We're talking with Ian McIntyre. So we were going to talk about the Canucks COVID situation.
That
was like 15 minutes ago, and then we talked to. I enjoy the discussion, and I think the listeners are too. But what is going on with the Canucks right now? Are they even going to be able to be active at the trade deadline? Is that even a focus of theirs right now? Are they 100% focused on the Canucks COVID situation, or are they still doing some business ahead of Monday's trade deadline?
No, they have to. They have to still be doing some business because the business is still operating, as Spartan and as desperate as it seems right now. The business is still operating. Doesn't mean that the priority, of course, is not the health of the players and their families. And that sounds trite to say, but it's obvious and it's legitimate as well that this is the number one thing, that these guys get healthy and that their families stay healthy. And if there are people in their family sick, then especially children, then obviously that's just paramount on everybody's minds. But there is still business, and the Canucks are still trying to figure out what may happen at this trade deadline. We finally saw a big trade yesterday with New Jersey and the Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
But I talked to a couple of managers from other teams in the Western Conference in the last week or so about the Canucks situation and some of the ramifications. And one of them told me he's convinced that the volume of trades is going to be off by at least 60%, at least,
mm-hmm.
just because of how all the barriers to making trades this season. Perhaps the most overlooked, that just nobody has any money. Like, there's been a lot of attention with the border and quarantines and now the Canucks situation, but teams they don't have money to take on salaries. And it's almost every trade, including rentals now, because a rental used to be a fairly straightforward thing.
Mm-hmm.
We give you a player who can help you for a couple of months or not. You give us a draft pick.
Yeah.
You give us a prospect.
Now you got to take a salary back. And
now you got to make the money work, even on a rental trade. And if you're talking about a player like, say, Brandon Sutter, whose cap number is north of $4 million, you know, that's a significant aspect to it. I think there's lots of teams, and just to stay on Sutter, there's, I think, lots of teams who, under normal circumstances, would love to have Brandon Sutter on their team for the last couple of months in playoffs of
sure.
a season, or the last, in this case, 1 month of the season and playoffs. But at this time, with the way almost everybody's capped out, and part of that is part of being capped out is not just this season. Like, everybody knew before this season began, I think you could figure it out when the pandemic first hit, that this season was going to be a really challenging year for the salary cap. But it's not just flat this year now. Now they know it's going to remain flat indefinitely. So people figure they're not going to have money like they have in previous years to go out and get players that they may need, and not just this year, but next year and the year beyond. So the other ramification of that thinking then is it's even harder to get teams to give up their draft picks and good prospects.
Mm-hmm.
People will always give you their, you know, driftwood
right.
and their extras, but to get a good prospect or get a quality draft pick is even harder now. Because of this. So, you know, what's going to happen with
are
the
you
Canucks?
Preparing Canucks fans for disappointment right now? Is that what
yeah.
is that what you're doing? You're,
well,
you're setting the table
are
for
at
like
the trade deadline. Although the trade deadline is funny because it's almost been Jim Benning's worst and best days.
Yeah.
He's never more vilified or the 1 year more popular. Well, even last year, you know, getting to Foley, that was a big bold move that
mm-hmm.
certainly helped the team. But and
then came back to bite him because he couldn't re-sign him.
Yeah, yeah, and should have, as we know
yep,
in hindsight. But, you know, he was never more popular, probably, even among his fiercest critics, than the deadline where he traded Hansen and Burrows
mm-hmm.
for two really solid prospects, neither of whom turned out.
Yep.
And he was probably never more vilified than, was it the previous or the year after, where he couldn't get a draft pick for Thomas Vanek, and people derided Tyler Motte, and now Tyler Mott's on the team, and is probably their best bottom six forward. So, I think I think people who are hoping that the Canucks might, say, make 2, 3, 4 moves for mid-round draft picks or B-level prospects. And a B-level prospect, I mean, you know, they have a chance to play,
right,
but they're not guaranteed. And they're probably not going to play in the NHL, but they have a chance. Anyone who thinks the Canucks might accumulate a few of those assets, I think, is going to be disappointed. I still think there's a chance they may find a way to make a deal. There's lots of teams who are interested in Tanner Pearson if the Canucks can figure out how to make a deal work and with a trading partner. But that, of course, assumes that they're willing to trade Pearson, because we know what Benning has said about his priorities. And I think there's an offer there in front of Pearson. You know, the sides have talked, so presumably he's got something where he can say yes or no. But I just think it's going to be tough for them. And then on top of that, and the reason I was calling these managers on other teams, on top of that, when your players are in COVID protocol, and some will still be so at the trade deadline, I think it tends to put a chill on discussions with other teams. Because,
yeah,
I mean, there's lots of evidence now. We've seen many players in the NHL come back off the COVID list and be fine. But there's still that little bit of doubt, you know, because this isn't a normal injury. This isn't a defined, you know, guaranteed recovery. I guess maybe no injury is, but it is, we all know this is different, right? So I think it's going to be tough. They are still going to try and see what they can do. But, you know, if they get anything more than, say, one trade done, I'd be surprised. I think we're looking at a pretty small scale moves here, if they can make any at all.
Ah, the Canucks. It's always interesting, isn't it, Ian?
It is. Otherwise, yeah, it better be. Otherwise, what are we going to do for a living?
Yeah, well, exactly. Thanks,
Ian. By the
way,
see, if Toronto wins the Cup, the best part about that is you won't have to work for 2 or 3 weeks, because programming will all be Toronto Maple Leafs.
If Toronto wins a Cup, I'm just gonna go travel the world.
Didn't you make some kind of outrageous claim on a bet once you were going to eat something or do something if somebody won?
Probably. I don't know.
It's not ringing a bell?
Yeah. Maybe just like quit and just do something else. I just won't be able to handle it. I'm just going to have to go live in a bunker or something. Ian, thanks for joining us today.
It was fun.
All right.
Didn't miss Halford at all.
No, I don't think anyone has anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Talk to you next week.
See ya.
Ian McIntyre, Halford and Brough Show.
Where are you? And I'm so sorry. I cannot sleep. I cannot dream tonight. I need somebody and always. The six drinks.
8:35 on the Thursday. Halford and Brough Show, Sportsnet 650. No Mike Halford today, in case you're just joining us. Mike woke up this morning, wasn't feeling well, so abundance of caution, etc., etc.
I think he's on the physically unable to perform list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's print out some submissions, what we learned. With Mike not here, with it just me, we should be able to get to a bunch of them. Rob in Surrey, what we learned, what I've learned is that Corey Connors is the first Canadian since Mike Weir in 03. Now, Rob says to legitimately win the Masters. Maybe this is a prediction or maybe that was a typo. But Corey Connors, I would say, is, you know, he's the most likely Canadian to win the Masters. There's three in the field. Corey Connors, Mackenzie Hughes, and Mike Weir. Corey Connors, I think, is now tied atop the leaderboard at 2 under. It's still early. A lot of golfers haven't even started yet. But he started out with a bogey, and he's had 3 birdies since then. He's through 9 holes, 2 under, tied atop the leaderboard. He came into this tournament playing well. He's in good form. But again, it's still very, very early. I think the thing with the most recent Canadians, and this goes back to, you know, Graham DeLatte and and includes Adam Hadwin and Corey Connors and all the Canadians that have been out on the tour since Mike Weir won that Masters. I don't know if any of them got to the point, I'm talking about the Canadian men here, where they had much of a chance in these big events. They were good enough to be on the tour and stay on the tour for the most part, but they weren't good enough to compete in the big tournaments. And maybe Corey Connors will change that narrative this weekend. Hopefully he will. But again, there's going to be a lot more action to come. What we learned, it's charming watching Bruff treading water. Or listening to Bruff treading water, at least. I guess it should be. It's hard doing this show by yourself. Rinty does it, or he had been doing it. Now he's got Karen. It's just Mike and I have such a back and forth where we're just constantly making fun of each other. That's the whole show. And then to come on and kind of it's a totally different style.
How long have you two worked together?
Oh,
over a decade, right?
Oh yeah.
So in that,
I think it goes back to like 2008.
So in all that time, is this the first time where you're solo hosting this show without him?
Yes, because it is.
This has never happened before.
Not solo hosting.
Wow.
You know, we don't always take our vacations together,
right.
But
you'd have fill-in guests.
Fill-in guests. But yeah, I think Mike might have done one by himself really early on in the Curtain Blog days, because I had gone to Boston for games 3 and 4, and I think he might have hosted one then. But that's way, way back.
That's an outstanding record that it's taken this long for this to happen.
Yeah, we're gamers. Until Halford wasn't this morning. Although, I guess it was probably smart that he didn't come in.
Just a little bit.
That's kind of changed, hasn't it? Like, what do you mean? What do you mean you're sick? You're sick enough to call me. If you're well enough to call me, you're well enough to work.
So a little peek behind the curtain. He calls me at 4:15. And he's telling me, you know, he's ill, he's not feeling well. And my first inclination isn't to say, oh, hey, like, don't worry about it. We'll take care of this. My first question is, so you're going to power through? Like, are you doing the show?
Yeah.
And he goes,
wear a mask.
I don't think that's the right move. Don't think that's what we're doing.
Oh, when I got the call this morning, I was still asleep, 4:30 in the morning. I'm like, what is going on here? All right. Fine, I'll do it by myself. What we learned, Jack on Mount Pleasant. Leafs fans are goalie blind, delusional. They will be fortunate to get past the first round. This is Gustafson Reimer 3.0. I don't know about that, but I will be curious to see if Kyle Dubas picks up a goalie at the deadline. And if he does, I think that says a lot about the health of Frederik Andersen. They're being very coy about the health of Frederik Andersen. Look, maybe Jack Campbell is the man and he goes on a run. We've seen inexperienced at the highest level goalies win Stanley Cups quite often in the last little while. Jordan Binnington, Matt Murray. There were serious doubts about these guys, whether they had the big game experience to get it done, and they got it done. So maybe Jack Campbell can be that guy for the Leafs. I hope not, but maybe. I like this one. I think I've lost it in the inbox here. But it was what we learned. Bruff was a guest on Ian McIntyre's morning show in that last segment. Yeah, we had two great talkers on the show today. Halford I'm glad, because Halford wasn't there. So we had Kevin Woodley, who can go on and on and on about goaltending forever. And then Ian McIntyre, who was just feeling very talkative today. I wanted to
ask
him.
That's not just today. That's IMAC.
Is that Kathy. What he does?
Yeah.
Because I think we started our conversation at 8:04, 8:05. And I wanted to talk to him about the Canucks COVID situation. And then we started talking about the history of the Canucks. And then I think it was 8:20 by the time I got around to, okay, what's going on with the Canucks and their COVID situation again and the trade deadline? Hey, he likes to talk. It's good.
My vibes are groovy.
What we learned, don't forget the days you guys slept in and left the other one solo.
Is this true?
We each had one sleep-in, but it wasn't a major sleep-in. So we each did have one sleep-in. So the other one, I think when I slept in, Halford and Kletch really struggled. Like, I think they panicked a little bit.
I mean, that's not surprising.
But Kletch, who is generally a very composed person, I think lost his composure a bit. And I think they started bickering at each other, behind the scenes at least, from what I heard.
No.
And I was kind of glad to hear it. I'm like, so you guys fell apart without me?
You're the glue guy. You clearly keep everything together.
Yeah. What we learned, the degree to which some fans and even members of the media hold up Benning's meager trade deadline acquisitions of Dahlin and Goldie are a massive damning with false praise. I think what Ian meant by what he said about the praise that Benning got when he acquired Dahlin and Goldie at the deadline is that's the type of move that fans were looking for. And he delivered. Now, ultimately, Jonathan Dahlin and Nikolai Goldobin did not pan out for the Vancouver Canucks. But the fan base was happy after that trade deadline. And there have been a couple other trade deadlines where, man, Benning was raked over the coals. I more remember the trade deadline where he didn't get anything for Ham Hughes and Verbata, because that was a really tough press conference for him. He had to go up there and be like, we wanted to make deals, but we just couldn't get it done. It was reminiscent to me of the Toffoli situation where he said, we ran out of time. Where they had a plan, or if they did have a plan, it didn't work. And that's always a bad situation to be in with the general manager, to say, we tried, but we failed. Like, that's a tough thing to admit. We wanted to do this. Alas, we couldn't, because we failed. Jim Benning, if the Canucks don't make a trade or can't make a trade or they only make a minor trade, I don't know how much blame the fans are going to give Jim Benning in this situation, even his most ardent critics. It's a COVID outbreak. It's going to affect things. One final segment to go. Again, I'll try and get some more What We Learns in, maybe before my awkward sign-off at the end of the show. Thank you for hanging with me, the listeners that have kept listening, the listeners that have contributed, texted in. I've been by myself today. I might be by myself tomorrow. Halford might be out again tomorrow for Ask Us Anything Friday on the Halford and Brough Show. It is the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. You've done well with the music today, Dom.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Halford and Brough Show, Sportsnet 650, no Halford, just Jason Brough. Bucket Truck Brad texts in, Brough, you can count me in the ardent critic crowd. I will not be giving Jim Benning a pass this year because he said, we have lots of time 5 weeks ago. Always delusional, always late. Same story year after year. Yeah, there will be... Let's say Tanner Pearson doesn't get traded and he doesn't get re-signed either. There will be people that would have said, well, you should have traded him sooner. And once again, you left it too late. And this is what happens when you leave things late. You allow the possibility of hiccups, in this case, a major hiccup with the Canucks, to happen.
Just don't forget one thing. Jim Benning?
We live day to day.
Yeah. And there's still time for deals to be made. Not a lot of time, mind you. But I don't think there's going to be many trades, period. I'm going to be very... again, the media always gets this stuff wrong. Like, the years that we're talking up the trade deadline and going, oh, it's going to be crazy this year. That guy could go here and that guy could go here. I think this team is going to be aggressive. And sometimes the trade deadline is just a complete dud. So I don't know. You never know. Maybe all the GMs around the league are just playing coy and they've got a bunch of deals coming. I doubt it, just because I don't even think the incentive is there. First of all, everyone's capped out, so it's hard to make deals, but also the financial incentive of going on a run with no fans in the stands, it just isn't there. So in a lot of cases, you might not even get approval from your owner to add salary to the books. Tomorrow is Ask Us Anything Friday on the Halford and Brough Show. We don't know if Mike will be back. If not, I'll be here again, maybe by myself, maybe with someone else. Dom will be here. Thanks for listening, everyone, today. This is when I have to stop talking.